Welcome to Transform Now, a podcast focused on intelligent automation and brought to you by SS&C Blue Prism. On this program, we talk about how organizations globally are rethinking the way they operate, utilizing process orchestration and AI-enabled digital workers to free up humans to do the work that matters most. We also share insights and tips on how you can embrace this new way of working and unleash your full potential. Let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone. Brad Hairston here with SS&C Blue Prism. Welcome to the Transform Now podcast. I am very excited to have a Blue Prism customer on the show today, Giovanni Gentili, Managing Director of Automation and Artificial Intelligence Platforms and Product Services at State Street Bank. Welcome, Gio. It's a pleasure to have you here today to talk about your automation journey. Why don't you start us off with an introduction?
Sure thing, Brad. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on. So a little bit about myself. I was born and raised in Detroit, Michigan. Went to Oakland University in Rochester, Michigan. You probably don't know where that is until you've watched the NCAA basketball tournament and saw Kentucky lose to Oakland University. So on a positive note, I don't have to say where that's at anymore.
Yeah.
But I received my bachelor's degree in mechanical engineering from Oakland. At OU, I was also an All-American soccer player, inducted in the university's Hall of Honor in 2009. I trained with Manchester City, was drafted to play professional. So I had a very good soccer career, and then that was kind of derailed by my music career. So I played guitar in a band on a small label in Detroit. And then from there, I went into the auto industry. So I started working for Ford Motor Company, got my MBA from the University of Michigan, and then wanted to be a professional chef. So I kind of bounced around on a lot of different things I wanted to do. And I was going to go to culinary school until September 11th happened, which was sad, unfortunately, but kind of the way things work in life and kind of moved you in different directions. So I've been in the auto industry about 20 years with Ford Motor Company, working both as an OEM and then also with suppliers as well, basically automating processes with physical robots. So I joined State Street in 2017 to work on virtual robots and moved to Austin as a result.
Very good. I find that a lot of people that are doing automation for a job have very interesting and diverse backgrounds, just like you. So you're quite the Renaissance man, I might say. Well, Gio, it's nice to have you. Let me ask you also just to talk about State Street Bank. For those not familiar with State Street, give us an overview. And by the way, it's hard for people not to know about it. I think it's one of the oldest, like, continually operating banks in the country. That's just fascinating in and of itself. But tell us more.
Yeah, sure. So it's a 230-year-old bank. It's an institutional bank, custodial bank, a lot of investments. I didn't realize when I was working at Ford Motor Company that my 401k was managed by State Street until I moved to State Street and saw that. So it was kind of interesting. But one of the fourth largest asset managers in the world, about $3.5 trillion in assets under management, about 42,000 employees. So a very big bank operating globally. And it's been an interesting journey, 6.5 years there at a bank of this size and not knowing much about financial institutions. State Street's up there, you know, with BlackRock and Vanguard.
Yeah, that's neat. I read another interesting note about State Street that with the explosion of ETFs, you know, exchange traded funds, I read that State Street actually created the first ETF back in 1993. So that's a really interesting data point as well.
Yeah, rich history for sure.
Yeah. So you mentioned in your introduction about how you kind of got to State Street, but how did you get into automation in the first place, especially after coming out of the auto industry? I mean, it's clearly automation in the factories has been there for a long time, but how did that provide a foray into the type of automation you do now?
Sure. Well, I guess back in 2017, I was kind of growing a little bit fatigued to the auto industry. You know, it's a pretty grueling industry, a lot of time sensitive, pressure sensitive environments. And I felt like I really wasn't growing. And ultimately, I needed a warmer climate, right? I wanted to have a little more sunshine. So through a friend of mine down in Austin, I heard that State Street was embarking on a technology transformation program called Omnia. And that program was a $1.5 billion program that had about 13 technology streams: cognitive computing, cloud, robotic process automation, distributed ledger technologies, unified data architecture, microservices, et cetera. So I decided to interview, and actually they wanted me because of my experience in automotive, because it was a bit different than what was happening in the financial services market. So kind of bringing that mentality. So I knew physical robots, but I didn't have any experience in financial services or virtual automation. But again, like I said, that was refreshing to the people I was working for at State Street. So I ended up moving down to Austin and really using, you know, an assembly line mentality, kind of like building the factory where you could essentially deliver automations through more efficient and regimented process, if you will. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, financial services are very different, right? I mean, $1 million is a rounding error in financial services, where a 3 or 4 cent savings in the auto industry is, you know, your hero. So it's mm-hmm. a very different skill set, but they are interrelated. So coming to State Street, I kind of wanted to bring that sort of mentality.
That's an interesting segue from the plant floor with physical robots to working in an environment with digital robots that you never see, that are on a server in the data center or wherever.
Absolutely.
So you've been in this space for a while. When your friends and family ask you what you do, I'm curious, what do you tell them?
Yeah, I mean, they all think I work in a futuristic world of building these robots that are going to take over the world. Essentially, we take the work that is repetitive and boring for people and automate it. So that's done, you know, as a, with a digital worker, aka a virtual robot. So those individuals can do higher valued work that benefit the company and the employees. So I think people's initial reaction was that I was kind of like the Grim Reaper and that I'm here to eliminate jobs, but that's really not the case. You know, at least for those individuals who want to do more thought-provoking work and grow their skill sets. So we do this by setting a program that facilitates this for the enterprise by providing automation services, if you will, to automate those processes and bring them to do, like I said, higher value work.
Okay. So let's talk about the automation journey at State Street. You talked about kind of what was ahead of you when you showed up there many years ago. How did that journey take place over the last several years as you guided it?
So when I first joined in 2017, there were some small pockets of POC automation. Blue Prism was actually one of the automation companies that we were dealing with. And my job really was to stand up and formalize that practice, if you will. So I also took over the existing global macro program and incorporated that into the automation team. And basically, we set up the program that provides services and guidance to automated processes. So we set up the COV to provide governance and a playbook or an SDLC, if you will, to execute on that. Platform engineering team to use the capabilities and provide infrastructure and support. And then a production support team to ensure that, you know, the automations continuously work. And then some governance within that COE to kind of bring it all together. So we ended up starting out by setting up a team in Krakow, Poland, did some delivery there, and then also some production support. And then we wanted to move into the APAC region as well. But that was right about the time when COVID hit. So it wasn't really happening at the time. So we kind of focused on just having kind of a hybrid model. So we have the COE, we have some delivery as well within the COE, but we also wanted to do some federated delivery. And that really meant by taking the delivery teams and embedding them, if you will, into the business, because you want that to be part of their operational DNA. So we tried to do that. It's worked in some cases. In some cases, it's been a little bit more of a challenge. But ultimately, in the end, as I mentioned previously, those 13 streams, only two survived. So all the other 12 or 11 streams were discontinued because they were technology for technology's sake. So it was RPA and cognitive computing, which my boss, Randy Swanberg, ended up heading up. So we kind of combined and became automation and artificial intelligence in about 2019. And at that point, we had a lot of capabilities. We had process analysis and engineering, data analysis, artificial intelligence operations, document intelligence, automation, which is a lot of workflow, RPA, RDA, from the integration reporting and production support services. So that's kind of how this all came together in 2019. And we kind of, you know, have been building that since.
Yeah. You mentioned some intelligent skills in there that you guys are taking advantage of. When did you first take the step into using AI-enabled skills and basically augmenting your digital workers so they could do more complex automations? And what was the impact of that to your program?
Sure. Well, that was, like, you know, right around 2019 when we kind of merged and all those other technologies kind of went by the wayside. So we set up that AI organization. We set up a design review board. We took our opportunity assessment team and commonized it across the organization, right? So now we're looking at more straight through processing and more end-to-end capabilities. So we had been doing a lot more individual efforts, a little bit more siloed at that point. So we brought that together. And, you know, workflow cases that kind of involved understanding documents, classifying them, you know, entity extraction and using RPA to kind of properly distribute and allocate those findings together. So it was about that point we started to say, hey, this makes more sense to work collaboratively together and, you know, to create more of an intelligent automation organization.
And where does Gen AI fit into that? Have you guys started down that path to start bringing that into play with your digital workers, or is that something you're looking at doing in the near future?
Well, absolutely. Gen AI is, as you know, the shiny new object, right? So it's not in everybody's tone these days and in conversation. So there's positives and negatives to that. I think the negative first is just that there's still so much foundational work that we can still do. So sometimes that gets overshadowed, Brad. Mm-hmm. And there are many more automations that we can do from an RDA, RPA workflow perspective. Right. But the exciting part of the Gen AI is just taking those insights, using large language models, and being able to provide more insights and more predictions and predictability moving forward. So we are definitely, you know, in a very much a POC moving forward phase and very, very heavily integrated and invested in the Gen AI side of it as we speak.
Yeah. Are there one or two use cases that are in your pipeline right now that you look at it and you think, wow, Gen AI could be the right way to go at that? Anything that just comes to mind?
Yeah, I think things like client-facing chats, the interface, contextual responses, you know, providing transparency into activities across the organization, insights and action based on audit options. I mean, there's a lot of things, combining multiple sources of information into a comprehensive narrative. So there's a lot of things from a Gen AI perspective that we can benefit from. But again, it's just kind of tying all those pieces together, finding the right sort of skill sets to do so. We're kind of a combination between homegrown capabilities and vendor supplied capabilities as well. So it's a nice combination.
Yeah, definitely. So Gio, about 4 years ago, your automation and AI program moved closer to the business domains under the company's business CIO. How significant was this change?
I mean, it was pretty significant. There was a time, I think, when the business had better insights, and we were kind of that. There's always that struggle between IT and the business. We wanted to kind of eliminate that division, if you will. And that kind of vibe wasn't really conducive, I think, to productive processes. And education information sharing was at an all-time high as a result. We started to work with the business more collectively and collaboratively. We were able to share some of the benefit that we were starting to achieve in some of the processes. And then that more of that top-down sponsorship. Because again, when you're IT in your business, you have different leadership kind of pillars. And those pillars maybe wouldn't necessarily see eye to eye. And we were starting to see a more of a collaborative approach, you know, and allowing the business now to maybe prioritize more of what they wanted to do, right? They had their budgets and we were kind of working with their budgets. In the beginning, we were the door-to-door salesmen. We were going after projects, trying to find projects to fund. Then became more capacity funded, which is a great step in the right direction. Ultimately, I'd like to be capability funded. Give us the budget and the tools to get the job done. If you don't succeed, you can fire us. But if you succeed, you can make it happen. We're going to put that destiny, if you will, kind of in your own hands. So being closer to the business was really a great step forward. We've since kind of moved away a little bit, but we're still much closer than we were at the beginning and shown positive results.
I've talked to so many of our customers who long for that kind of connection to the business. As you said, it's very significant in terms of driving and shaping your program and giving you that momentum you need.
Absolutely.
How do you quantify and communicate the benefits of automation at State Street?
So that is the million-dollar question, right? You know, when we first came in, it was all about FTE savings. And that's great, but there's so much more from a tangible and intangible perspective that you can benefit from. So initially, when we stood up the program, that's really what our CFO was looking for. How many FTEs are each of these projects going to bring? And that caused us to really go after a lot of complicated and complex projects because we were only looking for the FTE savings. So we kind of wanted to take a little bit of a different approach. You know, from a financial perspective, obviously you have the cost savings and cost avoidance, but then you also have revenue, you know, retention and revenue gains for risk and control, get risk mitigation, data loss, error reduction, downstream effects as well. And then you've got client satisfaction, accuracy of information, you know, reputation is huge as well. So there's so many intangible things that we try to collectively put together. We kind of created a benefits portal, if you will, and dashboarding so that we can work with the business and to show them, and they can actually go into the portal themselves and see how their individual use cases are doing or how the program overall is going. So there are many different facets that you need to look at. From I'm an operations guy, so optimizing processes, making them more efficient. They go much quicker. They go much faster. Your customers are much happier because they are now getting the information they need sooner, or they're allowed to trade sooner. There's a lot of, you know, advantages to that.
Have you received a lot of feedback from the business in terms of what benefits or what metrics make the most impact in their world? Or have you found that your team has been playing a bigger role in quantifying it in creative and innovative ways, and then showing that to them, and that tends to work best.
Yeah, I think that's a little bit of both, Brad. I think we had to have to show them what's feasible. I think in the beginning, they're really looking at cost savings or resource reduction. And again, I understand those are the most obvious, but we try to kind of educate them, if you will, on what the other intangibles like customer satisfaction. Or there's a case we did that was, it was KYC. So this was an automation we did for Know Your Customer. And the amount of time that it took to get a customer able to trade was about 30 plus days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we automated the process by using digital workers to kind of validate along the way and speed up that process by about 18 days or so. So it's about a 43% improvement, and that allows them now to trade faster and start making their money. But then also we start receiving additional revenue early on as well. So it really translated in almost about a $2 million improvement per customer because we were able to speed up that process. So being able to relay that to the business and show them that value, I think, has gone a long way. And they're starting to come around now to understand that there are so many different aspects to benefits.
Mm. Yeah, that KYC example is fantastic. And I love those stories. I want to ask you, do you have another story of an automation that delivered exponentially more value than even the business thought it would deliver? Is there something like that you can share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. And on the AI side, IDD, so inadvertent data disclosures, right? Those can be a big problem, obviously, when you're servicing clients at scale and you have that possibility of, you know, inadvertently disclosing data that doesn't belong to that client.
Right.
And the process we had in place was really manual, if you will, and it was a four eyes check. But what we ended up doing was introducing AI-assisted six eyes check on top of that. So it was rule-based checks, it was behavioral pattern AI checks, policy-based risk assessment. What else was it? Client data whitelists, manual investigation from a client services team. So we had estimated about $2,500 in savings per IDD prevented. And about the 3 years that we've used this now, I think we have over like 1.5 million emails checked and over 1,200 IDDs prevented.
Oh, North America, goodness.
And we're rolling it out in EMEA and APAC as we speak now. So that's really one that really caught our attention.
That is fascinating. I find that most companies have many examples like that where the bar was set. It seemed like a pretty aggressive goal, but you know, the benefits were even broader and greater than anyone could have imagined.
That's right. Those are big surprises. But you got to be careful too, because a lot of times when businesses are trying to obtain project funding, they'll go after the cases and they'll say, hey, the benefits of this are X, Y, and Z, but they're not really necessarily true. So you have to do your diligence as well to understand, because sometimes a lot of that return can be overstated and then you put a lot of effort and time into it and then the actual realization is different. So I always say what we do is, you know, theoretically, here's what we can save you. But in the end, you have to realize it. So it's up to the business to show them what those realized savings are. All we can provide you is to what the actual automation can do.
Yep. Great point. Gio, how would you say that State Street embeds automation and AI into its culture?
Well, I think constantly educating the business and demonstrating, you know, our capabilities for adoption is number one. So we're always doing road shows. We're always trying to find, challenging the business to find better ways. Coming from the auto industry, we were very key in process optimization. So a lot of process reengineering, we focus on that as well, because I didn't see a strong skill set within the financial services for that. So we really kind of challenged a bit to say, hey, there's five different ways to do reconciliations. Why don't we combine those and find an optimal way and then automate that using economies of scale to do so across the enterprise? Hmm. So showing the results through benefits dashboarding and testimonials, and then wanting individuals to do more thinking and less menial tasks. So a lot of that education comes from, hey, wouldn't it be great if you didn't have to spend your time looking for all these spreadsheets and combining information and making these sort of assessments, when you can have AI and automation do that for you. And now you can spend more time finding how to make more money for your customer or for State Street, or make things more efficient down the road. But there are challenges because of budgetary constraints. So budgetary and resource constraints make it difficult to really embed that more than we really have, you know, thus far. So I guess the challenge is making sure everybody's on the same page. And ultimately, there has to be that top-down sponsorship, as I talked about earlier. Mm. Because if you don't have that, I think business units are less apt to kind of go along with what you want to do. They have their own set of marching orders from their management. So it really needs to come from the top down.
Right. when you do those road shows, what's been the most impactful technique you've used leading to them wanting to do automations with you? Is it working through like use cases that they bring forward, like you mentioned the reconciliations one, or is it showing them demos, telling stories?
A combination of all that, Brad. But I think number one is we try to find use cases that we've done that could directly impact their business. Because when the proof is in the pudding there and you can see, okay, well, this process we use, you know, you guys automated and here's the result of that automation, right? That's number one. And then number two is other use cases and other possibilities. The art of the possible is something that's really important. Yep. And sharing those stories and making them more, you know, relatable. I worked in the auto industry for an automotive supplier that worked with BMW. And working with BMW, I met a guy who was very interesting. He said something to me that was really important, was that, you know, technology is not the problem, it's people. Mm-hmm. You have to really find the right people and work with the right people to get the work done, because the technology is really the easy part. So you have to kind of, I hate to say convince people, but you have to kind of open their eyes, if you will, to what that art of the possible is. And by doing so, you get them kind of juiced up and energized. And when you do that, then you've got more people on board. So obviously the business units that are more excited about it want to work with us in much greater detail. The ones that aren't and feel like they're being pulled, then it may become more of a challenge.
Yeah. I would imagine when you tell them how they're already benefiting from automation, like give them examples that are relevant, they probably are not even aware that digital workers are doing work for them. That's what I found, at least.
You're 100% right. Most people have their head down. They don't take a step back and stop and look. And that's what we're really kind of promoting. It's not how hard you work. It's really how smart you work. And if you can take the time to step back and you have an hour or two a day now to think and create, to come up with new ideas, how much more successful are you really going to be? I think exponentially versus now I have all this busy work. I don't have time to even think about it. There's a big difference in mentality when you're able to automate and free up that time.
So Gio, what would you say has been the biggest contributor to the success of the automation program there at State Street?
Well, I think people, Brad. I think creating a culture of transformation and change. I think one thing that was really beneficial when the Omnia program came in 2017, we had an influx of individuals from different industries, a lot of tech individuals, and not necessarily financial services. They're not financial services, but there's a different mentality. So if you're trying to build a fintech organization, you kind of need that combination, if you will. So it's difficult to do that at an enterprise level with the cultural shift, but you have to kind of lead by example. So I think my manager, Randy Swanberg, is in a great job. He's a great individual. He cares about his people. We've kind of taken that on as well, empowering our teams. You know, I don't necessarily sit in a lot of meetings because I want my direct reports to be the ones leading those discussions and making those decisions. So you start to create an empowering organization. And by doing so, now you have that formula, if you will, and the results start to speak for itself. The results are now fueling more desire to automate more and become more of that fintech mentality, if you will. So between the people, and I think also another factor, maybe not so obvious, but it really is a combination of internally grown capabilities along with vendor supplied capabilities as well. So that combination gives you a nice balance. And balance in the end, to me, it's always been the most important thing. I don't think the earth could exist without having some sort of balance. People are happiest when they're balanced. So balance is a big, big word for me. And that's what I think we were starting to achieve at State Street is that balance moving forward.
Yeah. Beautiful. So what's next for the automation program at State Street?
Well, I think Gen AI, like we mentioned earlier, right? I don't spend as much time in the Gen AI space with the team, and I will start to, but I mean, I do enjoy the platform engineering and the production support and the operation side of it. But I think Gen AI is, and you got to take that with a bit of caution, with a grain of salt, because it can be counterproductive as well. But those insights, I mean, people can go on ChatGPT and pump up a resume in 5 minutes. There's so many great things you can do to save you time. But then also, don't take that for hard work and for ingenuity on your own part as well. So I think we still need to be creative. My only concern is that we have all this work that's automated and now we cease to become very productive and we're just kind of monitoring artificial intelligence. So it's a double-edged sword, but I think that there's hugely, especially in financial investment opportunities with respect to that, Gen AI gives some great insights and look for predictability and some predictions in the future, NAV prediction and things like that.
I saw an article just yesterday that said that Gen AI was already past the hype cycle. It's now going into the trough of disillusionment. It just showed up like a year and a half ago. It's funny to me how the analysts are always trying to douse the flame and say, no, it's already on a downward trend. I'm not so sure I agree with that, but.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of information. I think you have to, like I said, I'm going to go back to the balance. I think Gen AI has a great place and an opportunity for us to grow, but you want to temper that with obviously manual effort and then also with automation as well. So if you learn to kind of find that right formula and that right healthy mix, then you'll go very far. And that's what I hope State Street achieves in the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, that's great. So as we wrap up here, you talked about soccer in your intro, and you and I have talked about that too separately.
Yeah.
What are you doing right now with soccer? Are you still like training athletes? Are you coaching any? I know you've done all of the above, plus played soccer, but what's on your plate right now?
So yeah, I'm kind of in limbo right now. I've got one son that's playing. We were just in Madrid, Spain about 2 weeks ago, which was great. We got to see a Champions League game with Atletico Madrid and Inter Milan, and then they were able to train at Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid Stadium. So I did start a training organization called Geometrics back in 2010. And that's really a combination of technical soccer skill. There's yoga, there's martial arts. There's a lot of different facets, you know, gratitude. Again, I'm very big on, again, well-rounded type of individuals. So I do some private training there. I've pulled too many hamstrings to continue to play. So I'm at retirement now with respect to that. But soccer's been, you know, so great. And I've learned so much. And when you coach and you play, you learn a lot. And I take that and all that learning and I apply it to my teams as well. From my team's perspective, I'm the coach. I'm not the guy who's scoring the goal or stopping the goal. I'm not the guy who's creating the platform or maintaining the platform. I put the team together to get that work done. They're the stars. And my job is to make sure everybody works well together. And it's cohesive. So I always try to draw similarities from that. And even from a music career as well, when I was managing the band, going out and talking to people and convincing people to allow us to play at their venues. So there's a lot of things that you do outside of your normal work day that can really affect and improve your work if you only just take a step back and kind of reflect on that. So yeah, soccer's been one of those things that really made a great impact, met a lot of people, and I've had a lot of job opportunities as a result from just meeting parents and coaching. And then I've got one of my former players is the kicker for University of Michigan, which won the national championship. So, you know, I've got athletes, the student athletes have done really well. And just having them come back and say, hey, you're a great coach. I loved having you. And that to me, it's what's in the end worth it, just to impact people's daily lives.
That's great. And you raised your kids to be Manchester City fans, I'm assuming.
Yeah, and they had no choice. Yeah, so that was more of a fun. You know, I went to, had a connection and was able to go over there and try out. Didn't work out. They weren't crazy about Americans there, so I got my butt kicked the whole time. But I really enjoyed it. It was a great experience. Yeah, we're Man City fans, and I'm an AC Milan fan in Italy, and my son's a Juventus fan, so we have a good time going back and forth with that as well. And then down here in Austin, you have Austin FC, and they've done fairly well as well. So I hope that soccer continues to grow here in the United States. Like a lot of big names like Lionel Messi and others that have come to play in the United States. So it's getting more popularity. And then you've got the World Cup that's going to be here in 2026, which will be very exciting as well.
That's right. Here's a fun fact for you. The blue in Blue Prism comes from Manchester City Blue.
I knew it.
You knew it? Okay. You met our co-founder, I think, probably.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they were both Man City fans from that area.
Oh, good to know. And
I didn't hear that until like a year ago, but
that's amazing. That's how all things are connected, right? That's why I'm such a big Blue Prism fan. Let's see.
Circle of life. It all comes together.
Circle of life is exactly right, Brad.
Well, Gio, it's been a pleasure talking to you and congratulations on all your success with the automation program at State Street. It's really remarkable. Every time I hear it presented or talked about, I'm so impressed. And I know it provides a great example to a lot of our customers that haven't quite scaled and grown and innovated the way that your program has. So I hope they will take note of it.
It has done a great job. And I'm just for a plug for Blue Prism and SS&C, right? So when we first started, we had maybe 5-10 robots. We were up to about 500 virtual digital workers now in over, I think, 60 or 70 processes or use cases that have multiple processes within them. So we've saved about 1.5 million hours back to the business, which equates to about $25 million savings annually. And that's just on the RPA side. So Blue Prism has been a great vendor and a great partner, more importantly, as we continue our journey. So appreciate all the work that you and your team have done as well, Brad.
You bet. Well, thanks again, and I wish you the best.
Thank you, my friend. Take care and enjoy the sunshine.
Thank you for listening to Transform Now, the podcast from SS&C Blue Prism. You can find all of our episodes on your favorite podcast channel, as well as YouTube. To stay on top of the hottest topics in the world of intelligent automation, subscribe now. The future of work is here.